Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the sound, it's John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning into our award-winning public affairs program, For the People, bringing you even more information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. This morning, we're opening with a celebration. 211 is celebrating its 40th anniversary this year as a unique help by telephone service made available for free to residents year-round, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We're going to tell you all about it. Then we're going to celebrate spring and warn you about all the ways unscrupulous characters are trying to scam you, take your money, or steal your identity with Connecticut BBB. And we'll clue you in on the top 10 businesses with the highest number of complaints to the BBB last year. Lastly, we're going to talk about advances in the state's Medicaid system. Connecticut's experience with reforming Medicaid is showing improved health outcomes and care experience on one hand, and downward per enrollee cost trends on the other. So we're going to chat with the medical director from Connecticut's Department of Health about this achievement that's ultimately saving money and making more services available for state taxpayers. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Voquette, right after this news. The Connecticut Public Transportation Commission is holding a public hearing at Bristol City Hall, first floor meeting room on North Main Street, Tuesday, May 10th at 7 p.m. This is going to be the first of three hearings that the commission holds statewide this spring to gather testimony from the public, transportation providers, officials, and other entities concerning the operation of public transportation services, dial-a-ride, and ADA transportation, as well as other issues. The commission seeks public comment on the extent to which existing services are meeting public needs and on improvements or new services to address unmet travel needs. In addition to the May 10th hearing in Bristol, the commission's other spring public hearings are going to be May 23rd out in Willimantic at the Wyndham Town Hall and June 7th in West Haven at the West Haven Town Hall Senior Center. Both those meetings are also at 7 p.m. The commission will also hold four additional hearings later this year. Well, it's time for a celebration, and we are celebrating 211 here in Connecticut. It's their 40th anniversary, and I've had the opportunity to call and check out their website to get information over the years. Full disclosure, I'm also a former employee of United Way, so this is a United Way affiliate service, and we are happy to welcome Wendy Caruso. She's Director of Call Center Operations for Connecticut's 211. Wendy, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So first of all, let's talk a little bit about yourself. How did you end up getting involved with 211?
Actually, I came in. I was very interested in health and human service and social programs that are available in the state. Very interested in coming in and being part of and working in a contact center and helping build a contact center around 211 in the United Way.
Excellent. And you have prior experience working in call center type environments?
I do. I've worked in several different industries, utilities, insurance, retirement.
So I understand, having done broadcasting and a little bit of dispatching, that it really takes a unique kind of person to come in and work in a situation like 211. And if it was just information, it would be one thing, but as I just learned from you a few moments ago before we flipped the switch to talk, that 211 also does currently, and I guess has for some time, had trained intervention folks that can really be that first line of defense when somebody calls 211 and they're at their last limits.
We actually are a blended information and referral and crisis intervention line. We are crisis workers, along with being INR, contact specialist, and INR being information and referral specialist. And one of the things that we do, having that number, 211, Residents within the state of Connecticut can call us whether they're experiencing a situational crisis where they might be in need of housing or shelter or utility assistance to someone who's experiencing mental health related situations, or we really look and work from the client's perspective, very client focused. So the client defines what their crisis is. And again, it can be from a situational crisis that they're experiencing something immediately, to those that need something a little bit more in assisting them with a more difficult situation, somebody who could be at risk of homelessness or experiencing substance abuse or mental health issues as well. And we would provide referrals to those individuals within the community.
So let's wind things back to the early days, to the very beginnings of 211. That was before your time with the agency, but let's talk to the extent that you know about how this whole thing got started.
Sure. Back in 1976, local state government and United Way leaders recognized that there were thousands of agencies and programs within the state to help people, but it was really challenging for individuals to find out what resources were available and which resources would provide the most benefit to them. An InfoLine, back then we were known as InfoLine, was established to provide that centralized single source of information about access to health and human service resources within the state of Connecticut.
And this was started as a United Way initiative.
Back in 1976, yes. And then in 1999, we became the first state to use those simple three-digit 211, and that was on a statewide basis. So residents within the state dial 211, and they can access a variety of services that we offer here.
And while 211 has been great in promoting its website, it really was sort of, I guess, in the late 1980s, early 1990s, when the internet began to play an important role in the types of information and services you could deliver on a much wider scale. You didn't have to engage a person on the telephone and have that back and forth and have them looking up or accessing information for you. Maybe the computer networks that were accessible to the operators then to some extent became accessible to everyone in Connecticut.
And that is true. And currently we have just upgraded, I guess, really
enhanced.
Took a look at, yes, enhanced, upgraded and enhanced our website, which is www.211ct.org, and it really made the search engine easier. So if someone's looking for housing or someone's looking for shelter or food pantries, it makes it really easy to go onto our website, put in a search term such as food, and based on the area or where the individual lives within the state of Connecticut, would be able to access food-related resources, housing-related resources, any type of resource by putting in a term and a city that the city or town that the individual lives in. And right now we register more than 2 visits to our website for every phone call that we handled. So we still have many callers into our contact center who would prefer to speak to us by phone, but we also are moving along with social media and being able to have a very robust web where individuals can go and search resources themselves if they so choose.
And there's also, the obligatory interactions and presence on things like Facebook and Twitter. You guys have really kind of come into your own here in 2016 on the occasion of your 40th anniversary of 211. And you're pretty much everywhere for anyone in Connecticut or even beyond who might need it.
That is true. We are we handle several calls for some of our crisis-related services from folks with outside the state of Connecticut, but a majority of our callers do come from inside, you know, who live in the state of Connecticut currently.
Great. Folks, if you're just tuning in, we are talking and celebrating with Connecticut's 211 info line, celebrating 40 years this year. In fact, on 211 on February 11th, Governor Daniel Malloy recognized the history and the great work that 211 has been doing here, providing so much information and saving lives, frankly, through their intervention and their professionals on the other end of the line. Don't forget 211ct.org, their brand new website, also has a robust database. And Wendy, the other great thing is that it's not just for people that need help, it's for people that might want to give help. They can learn about a wide variety of different types of charities and causes here in Connecticut, maybe to look up if they decide they want to volunteer in their community, or maybe they work half a state away. Maybe they live in the Hartford area and work in Stamford, or they live in Bridgeport and work in Hartford, and they want to find a charity where they can maybe do some volunteer time at the end of their work day, one day a month or once a week during their lunch hour. They can go on 211 and really fine-tune the search to get connected to a cause that really invokes their greatest passion.
And that is true, and it's not only for looking for specific to participate in certain charitable events, but also for they're interested in donating, too, so we have resources available for this. And we've talked a lot about the health and human services component of it, but individuals calling 211, we really have a centralized, or what we consider an umbrella, which encompasses a variety of the services that we can direct folks through if they dial 211. And on our website, our 211 Child Development Info Line, our 211 Child Care, our Emergency Mobile Crisis Intervention Service for young people. We recently, in July of last year, brought in a new program which is called Coordinated Shelter Access, where we are partnering with providers across the state to assist callers who may be in need of shelter or who are at imminent risk of homelessness. So we have a wide variety of services that we can provide referrals on, and for many different people within the state.
Yep. And people talk a lot and hear a lot about big data. 211 owns big data. Your database resources are also an unbelievable source of information for people. Talk about drilling down into the hyper fine details of information. It's all right there at 211ct.org, right?
That is correct, and we have a team of individuals who work daily with providers in the community to keep that, and yearly to work with providers in the community to keep that information updated. Not only do we hear it through our info department and yearly surveys to gather that information, but a lot of times callers will call into the contact center or through our website and provide changes to perhaps a location, or that they heard about a new service that was available in the community. And then that goes into our information department, where they vet those type of requests and work to update our database so that we are always as most current as we can be in providing those resources.
So as 211 turns its attention to the next 40 years, do you have any idea of some of the things that the organization itself would like to see to improve its services and the ability for folks in Connecticut and beyond to access those services?
I think at this point we are exploring other opportunities with our infrastructure and our technology base. A lot of our information now, again, is housed in our resource database, which our contact specialists who are answering the phones have accessible to them to provide information and referrals to the clients. What we see moving into the future is perhaps text and chat resources, and we're exploring some of those opportunities right now. We currently handle anywhere between 25 and 35,000 calls a month. Mm. And in 2011, we were over 391,000 calls and in an annual basis. So our calls vary depending on the seasons. When it is very cold or there is a weather-related event, at times the governor has called on 211 to be there to answer calls from residents of the state of Connecticut who may be needing shelter due to the extreme cold weather, or if there is power outages because of a major storm, we would be here to help direct clients and provide referrals for folks that are looking for shelter while the utilities restored. So it's a wide variety of things, but we're hoping to expand how clients can contact us in the future.
Great. So I guess the last thing to talk about is access. Is this a 24/7 situation on the phone and online as well?
Yes, it is. We're 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. We are here during inclement weather. We are here during any type of Mother Nature,
yes.
Any weather-related event. So we are always available. Folks can contact us directly 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, including the weekends, but they can also visit us on our website on the www.211ct.org. So if they can't, you know, they don't have a minute maybe to call where we can provide them some resources and they have a minute and they can get out on the website itself is very robust and they're able to find the same referrals out there as well.
Great. Before we let you go, Wendy, just for the last minute or so that we have, just let people know if they do call 211 here in Connecticut, what they're going to experience on the other end of the line, and if there's anything that people should know when they're making the call to be able to more efficiently route that call to the right resources that they're looking for.
And that's a great, thank you for letting me provide some information on that. When individuals dial 211, we've tried to streamline the process of having someone who might be experiencing a crisis or are homeless or at risk of homeless and need shelter to reach us very quickly by placing those prompts up front, and those go right directly into our contact specialist. There are other options for our information and referral, our child care and care for kids program, as well as our child development info line. So I would say for most folks, dial 211, listen carefully to the prompts, press those prompts, and we will get you directly to a contact specialist or the correct referral agency to help you.
Excellent. In 1976, State of Connecticut and United Way leaders recognized that there were thousands of agencies, programs, and services helping people. And here in 2016, 211 is still celebrating. It's their 40th anniversary this year, and it's a great concept, a unique help by telephone service that's made available free to Connecticut residents year-round, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. What has 211 done for you lately? It's just a click away or a phone call away. Of course, you're hearing the number 211. You also want to check them out on 211ct.org. Wendy Caruso is 211's Director of Call Center Operations and a great radio spokesperson for the organization. Maybe you'll hear her voice on the end of your 211 call someday. Wendy, it was great to speak with you, and thank you so much for the opportunity to help you celebrate the 40th anniversary of InfoLine here in Connecticut. We were so tired of inviting Howard Schwartz to our radio station that we finally decided to
see if we could invite ourselves over to visit with him at Connecticut BBB. BBB serving Connecticut. Howard Schwartz, our regular guest. And now for the season of spring, we have come to his office to record our program. So pleased to be his guest today here in Cromwell.
Yeah.
New offices. Nice new offices. They got the industrial look going out in the lobby. It's pretty cool if you've ever have occasion to stop by and get some consumer information in person. I'm sure they'll be glad to say hello. Howard Schwartz is Executive Communications Director for BBB serving Connecticut, and we are starting out with an appropriate spring subject. Everybody is into spring cleaning or will be in the next few months, so we're going to go into a trilogy of reports about electronics, and the first one is involving sort of like a spring cleaning theme with electronics, right, Howard?
That's correct. And first of all, welcome. Nice to see you here. Digital spring cleaning, when we talk about spring cleaning, we're thinking about cleaning out the garage, getting rid of things that just accumulate over the winter. But very few of us think about a digital spring cleaning. And the advantages are very important, not only speed up your computer and your smart devices, but also to increase your security. Everything that's on your computer can potentially be hacked, and some of us keep way more personal information on our computers and our smart devices, and we really should. And this is important for businesses, too. So we should consider a few things, one of which is that we have personal information sprinkled all over the internet, online accounts or cloud storage, things we might not use anymore. So once you understand the necessary steps to clean out your computer, you can significantly strengthen your security and prevent many of the hacking and identity fraud issues we talk about so often. So here's your checklist. Back it up. I cannot emphasize how important it is to make a copy of your files and back it up regularly on an external drive. External drives are very inexpensive now, but then you no longer have to worry about what's happened to all of your files if you lose your computer or smart device, if it's stolen, or whatever. And seasoned computer users will do a regular backup when there are substantial changes or additions to files. This is one we don't talk about often. Delete unused software, because old programs can slow down your system. They may be more vulnerable to the latest hacking methods. Update your existing software and patches. Updates tend to improve performance, but they're also there to close security holes, so to lessen the chances of being the victim of a breach. Get rid of junk, your photos, video, old files, and archives. These can take up space and slow performance. You can put those on an external drive as well. Do some thorough scans. There are paid and free programs that will scan your computer for errors as well as for malware. But it's one thing to have this type of software. It's another thing to update it and use it. So it's very important. And finally, unsubscribe if you don't use it. And that means opt out of receiving newsletters, alerts, and other emails if you don't use them. So digital spring cleaning, with the amount of time we spend online, we really have to think carefully about this.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting how we think about cleaning out the house, but so much of our lives are in that little box or laptop or even in the handheld device that we carry around to talk to folks on, technology attached to our phones. So all that is are great ideas for people to do spring cleaning on their electronic devices. But it leads into the next subject, which is a big reason why, and that is because we used to talk about making sure our house was secure. We had motion detector lights and things to stave off burglary. We have alarms in our cars, but we really need to come to an understanding that it is these electronic and smart devices that are the sort of the new frontier for criminals.
Yeah, I think, John, sometimes people think of a smart device as just being that, something that can make phone calls, when in fact it is a computer, first and foremost, that can make phone calls. And the reason I say is we keep a tremendous amount of information we should not be keeping. And we'll give the example of credit cards and passwords, and people do leave those in their smart devices. If we've learned anything over the past decade, it's that virtually any computer can be hacked. And that's the bottom line. We've seen the most popular systems smart device systems getting hacked. We've seen that with the Google Android system. But there's been a long-held perception that Apple is immune from all types of hacking. And that's just not true. There was a recent breach of the iCloud storage system that Apple users tend to gravitate towards. And we also know that Apple devices can be hacked by individuals, and now we see by law enforcement. So we have to know that hackers in the old days, the reason they never concentrated on Apple products was because so many of us chose the Windows platform. But now, because so many people are using Apple products, the scammers, the cyber criminals, are turning their attention to what they figure will be a much bigger payoff. If they can get into all smart devices, they're going to get a tremendous amount of information. And with things like portable pay systems on these smart devices, they can get information that we really don't want them to get hold of. So we're looking at this as potentially the next big area for criminals. And people really have to consider using the same caution with their smart devices as they do with their home computers. The most important thing to do, and the manufacturers are very clear about this, is download your apps from reputable sources only. So if it's Apple, that would be from their App Store. If it's Google Android, it would be from Google Play. Remember that links are risky, whether it's a text on a smartphone or whether it's an email. Be careful in public places. If you're using Wi-Fi that does not require a password, don't do any online banking, that sort of thing. And if it's a free Wi-Fi that's available, ask them what is the name of the Wi-Fi network, because criminals will set up a network that says Coffee Shop 2, and then they're around the corner or in the coffee shop monitoring everything you're doing online.
That's a critically important point, because most people, and I was just telling somebody this the other day, that if you want to save the gig data that you're paying for with your mobile plan, every single time you walk into a business, assume they have Wi-Fi and go to the necessary menu on your phone to search to determine whether that Wi-Fi is there. So you just gave me a really important piece of information, and that is, don't just assume that the coffee shop named Wi-Fi provider is the provider in the coffee shop you're in.
Exactly. If you've ever left your Wi-Fi on and went to a public place, you can see everybody else whose phone is on Wi-Fi. Mm. So, you know, 2 years ago, we did something where we took a keyboard into the parking lot while a reporter was here and showed how, using Bluetooth, we were able to actually intercept and start typing something into a computer that was several yards away.
Wow.
So finally, update your operating system. Again, these are things that are there to protect you. Nobody likes to sit there and massage their computer, but you can have your computer do that automatically.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Howard Schwartz, the voice of Connecticut BBB, right here from BBB's headquarters in Cromwell. Stick with us. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. The Connecticut State Police is partnering with CVS Pharmacy and the Partnership for Drug-Free Kids to collect unused prescription medications and prevent potential drug abuse. All of the 11 state police barracks across Connecticut now have permanent drug collection drop boxes made possible through a donation by CVS. Residents can deposit unwanted, unused, or expired medication, including controlled substances, anytime, no questions asked. Why should you go to all this trouble? As you may have heard many times on our program, more than 70% of teenagers said it was easy to obtain prescription drugs from medicine cabinets in their homes or in the homes of their friends. So check all your medicine cabinets, remove all unused and old prescriptions, and head over and dump them, no questions asked, at one of the state's 11 state police barracks. We also want to remind you that uninsured Bridgeport children without access to a dentist will be able to receive needed dental care at no cost during the Cool Smiles, Sharing Smiles Free Care Day, Sunday, May 15th. The free dental care is available to area children up to 18 years of age from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Cool Smiles, New Haven, 531 Elm Street. Available treatments include dental exams, limited emergency care, extractions, fillings, and baby tooth root canals and crowns. Treatments will be provided on a first-come, first-served basis, and offerings will be determined by the dentists. You want to know more? Call 203-764-2752 or visit mycoolsmiles.com/sharingsmiles.
The familiar voice of Howard Schwartz, Executive Communications Director for BBB, serving Connecticut. We are coming to you this morning from the BBB headquarters in Cromwell. Nice change of pace for the past almost 2 decades or so. We've had Howard visiting with us at the radio station, and now we've had an opportunity to turn the tables and visit with him. So the next item of business that we need to get into is a very important list. It's something I report on both in print and as a broadcaster, and that is each year the BBB releases the roster of some of the most the companies drawing the most complaints to BBB. So, Howard, how are we looking for 2015 in terms of who got the most complaints?
Well, we're going to do this by type of business, TOB. Mm-hmm. And I've got to tell you, this is one of my favorite news releases of the year because it's so revealing. So we're looking at the top 10 complaints by type of business for 2015. And the funny thing is that the same types of businesses are in there as 2014, 2013, 2012, with very, very little change in who the players are. So if you look, there's a pattern. Number one most complained about type of business is cellular telephone and service and supplies. Number two is telephones. Three is new car dealers. Then we have television, cable, and collection agencies, used cars, furniture, retail, banks, internet shopping, and auto repair and service. I went through those quickly, but here's essentially what makes up the top 10. We look at the top and we have communications, something we use every day. Our cars, something we use every day. Our entertainment, and we have a love-hate relationship with these things, but when they're not working properly, when we don't have good customer service, these draw complaints. Banks, retail, internet shopping, not surprising. What is surprising is when you look at the, not the complaints, but what we call inquiries, and that means every time somebody goes on the Better Business Bureau website to research a business, that's called an inquiry. Okay. And when we look at the top 10 most inquired about types of businesses, we find all but one are the are not on the top 10 most complained about businesses. And if we look at those, so we have roofing contractors, general contractors, auto dealers, used cars, that's the one that has that crossover. But plumbers, construction, remodeling, home air conditioning. So essentially, these are also big ticket items, and people are doing due diligence, and they're doing their research. And we find the number of complaints against the top 10 in 2015 dropped, and the number of inquiries increased. So that's a good sign that people are starting to, at least the inquiries, to be careful before they sign a contract. As for the other ones, our communications, our transportation, and those types of things, I think that with our reliance on them, there are always going to be complaints about them, and also because they're ubiquitous. Everybody has these things.
Yeah. What's intriguing about the second list that you read is how I remember back in late 2014 and early 2015, I was reading a lot and doing a lot of writing about the fact that 2015 was going to be a year that a lot of people were expecting to kind of hunker down into their own place of residence, to do a lot of home improvements and things to try to retain or increase the value of their properties or their homes. And how all of that list, save for I think one or two, are now people who were doing their due diligence.
That's correct. And what we see is a correlation that if you do your research, you will tend to be more satisfied and less inclined to file a complaint.
Excellent. So now I think the next thing we have online is Storm Chasers.
Yes, right.
Storm Chasers, not the ones looking for that elusive tornado, but ones who are looking to suck money out of your pocket or wallet.
That's right. To you, your parents, your grandparents, everybody pretty much. And that's funny, the remark about the storm chasers. They did get the name from out west and down south where you have terrible storms. They would come into neighborhoods, flood them, if you will, knock on doors and tell people you have a couple of loose shingles on the roof. Or would you like us to do this, that and the other thing? Well, as we can see this year, you don't need snow to get the snow chasers, the storm chasers coming around. Across the country, they're knocking on doors in neighborhoods. They're offering to do all of these different repairs and renovations, but some of them are not registered, they're not licensed, they're not insured, and they might not even be competent to do this type of work. So ask yourself, do you want somebody who's not properly qualified to do a job working on your roof or your electrical system? So the problem is you have to look these folks up, and you can do that with the Secretary of the State's website or the Department of Consumer Protection, and don't be embarrassed about asking for a proof of insurance. Now, we know that doing business at your front door is probably the worst way of all. If somebody knocks on your door and they give you a one-time-only deal, you know, give us a down payment and we can start the work tomorrow. Mm. In many cases, they're going to walk away with that money. If the job is botched, you may have difficulty getting in a qualified professional to fix it because of liability, because poor materials have been used or the workmanship is bad. So think very carefully. And if somebody comes to your front door and offers you, again, a special deal like that, the high-pressure tactics are an indication that it is most likely a scam.
Yeah. Also, in Connecticut, we're really lucky because our State Office of Consumer Protection maintains a fund that helps homeowners reclaim money because of botched or improper work. But you can only make claims, I guess, on that fund if the person who did the work was a registered state contractor. So in situations where you're rolling the dice on someone who makes it sound like it's a great deal, oh, we just finished a roofing job a couple blocks over and we really overestimated our materials, and I notice you have the same kind of shingles on your roof. Are you interested in getting a great deal on our surplus from your neighbor's job? It sounds really, really attractive, and it you know, kind of old school, makes sense, kind of making the best out of someone else's mistake. But in fact, that mistake can really turn the tables on the consumer.
It can. And this brings back the two most important points when you're hiring a professional, aside from doing your research. And one of them is to get several bids. And the other is to ask for recent references. And the reason I say this is because businesses change hands very quickly, as do the workers. So the people who did such a great job a year ago for your aunt or neighbor may not be doing so well. So check the latest references, go and see the work. And good luck. If you do your research properly, you should not have trouble knocking on your front door. And by the way, you know, we're from a generation where you don't slam down the phone or close the door, but we got to protect ourselves.
Absolutely. Our time is short, so we really need to reserve the last few moments that we have with you, Howard, to help the young upcoming students. And with that in mind, as we always try to do, either through PSAs or announcements when you visit, is to remind folks that BBB has a scholarship offering. Let's tell our aspiring students how they can take advantage of that.
I'm really glad you brought that up. We're seeking submissions now for a 2016 Student Ethics Scholarship, and this recognizes a high school student who personifies strong ethics and is demonstrated through leadership, community service, and academic history. And these will be the leaders and perhaps politicians of the future. Now, we also have a military line Student Ethics Scholarship, which honors a student from a military family with the same attributes. So this is open to all Connecticut high school students in their junior year and can be applied towards tuition costs at an accredited college or university of their choice. The deadline for this is July 8th, and the scholarships will be presented at our annual awards banquet in November. So if you'd like to apply for the Student Ethics Scholarships, find out more about them. And even if you don't have a student at home, tell other people about this. Come to visit us at bbb.org/Connecticut, with Connecticut spelled out, and look towards the bottom of our homepage, and you'll see Student Ethics Scholarship Application.
Excellent. And to review any of the information that we discussed today, as well as a wealth of other consumer protection and advice information, it's the same website, bbb.org/Connecticut. Howard Schwartz is Executive Communications Director, and we're so pleased to be able to join him here at his office at the BBB headquarters for Connecticut in Cromwell. Howard, once again, always great advice, seasonally specific. And we can't wait to visit you in the summer. Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much, John. Take care.
Well, I'm pleased to make the acquaintance of Dr. Robert Zavosky, who's on the line with us right now. He is a former pediatrician and now medical director for the State Department of Social Services. And the reason that we have him on today is, according to a recent Wall Street Journal report, Connecticut's Medicaid program is one that has saved money and improved care. And this is being attributed to the Molloy Wyman administration's 2011 decision to move the system away from mainly for-profit managed care insurers. So this is a part of the state government that I have very little familiarity with. So I'm so pleased to have Dr. Zavosky on to give us a little bit broader explanation and talk us through some of the initiatives that the state is doing to affect these positive changes that were touted in the journal report. Dr. Zavosky, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So I see that the decision to move the Medicaid system away from for-profit managed care insurers has provided a number of opportunities to work with providers. Let's flash back to 2011 and talk a little bit historically about how and why this all rolled out.
I think it was actually a fairly gradual sort of thing. Connecticut's Medicaid program moved in large part into managed care back in the mid-1990s. And over the years, parts of that system was sort of brought back to the department, starting with behavioral health for children about a decade ago, and then the dental program, and then behavioral health for adults, and we brought the pharmacy program back. And so relatively little was left in managed care in 2011. And there were a multitude of reasons for that. Managed care had had brought a great deal of success in the 90s and in the early first part of the new millennium. But as time went on, a number of those benefits started to wane a little bit. Many, many large insurers, or large companies rather, large employers, are quote-unquote self-insuring, where they contract with an administrative service organization to administer their health benefits, but that the risk and the decisions are still held by the employer. And essentially what the Molloy-Wyman administration did 4 years ago or 5 years ago is to essentially look at the trend around the country of large employers self-insuring and saying, you know, there's a lot of good reasons for doing that. Let's do that for Medicaid, and that's exactly what we did.
So this initiative, which is now being looked at, you know, where years ago Connecticut was looking around, I guess, a lot of states and other government entities are now looking at Connecticut because the new initiative, which I see is called Managed Fee for Service, has, as we said, opened up a lot of opportunities for the state to work more closely with the medical providers, but at the same time, it flattens administrative costs. Is it not costing more, or is it actually saving money compared to what we might have been proportionally spending, you know, up to 2011?
Well, we're saving more per member per month. But I think there's a number of reasons for that. Changing, moving away from managed care did decrease administrative costs. That's true, and that's part of it. But there's a number of other things that have happened as well. Part of the Molloy administration's emphasis has been on primary care and preventive care. And I think managed care companies try to do that, but they struggle with it. But as a single ASO arrangement entity that we have now, we can emphasize primary care and preventive care in many ways that some managed care companies can't. And so Connecticut, you may have heard that under the Affordable Care Act, the legislation that created Obamacare, one of the things the act did was for a period of 2 years paid states to increase primary care rates up to 100% of Medicare. And for Connecticut, that was quite a bump in primary care provider rates, which brought a lot of new primary care providers into Connecticut Medicaid. We have more pediatricians, more family physicians, more internists, more geriatricians doing primary care for our membership than ever before. And the model and the idea is very simple. It's the primary care that I tried to provide as a pediatrician many years ago. That if you have a primary care provider, whether it's a doctor or nurse practitioner, physician assistant, who knows you, who you see on a regular basis, who knows your problems, knows your needs, but also makes sure that you get your preventive care, you get your vaccines, you get your screenings, etc., that care over time tends to be far less expensive, but it also tends to be much higher quality care. Primary care providers don't order a lot of tests. They don't order a lot of tests two or three times. They may order a test once, whereas if you've got an emergency department doing some care and some specialists doing some care and an urgent care center, they're all doing the same things over and over and over again. So we're providing primary care. We're doing tests once. We're making sure people are getting their preventive care. And a large part of the benefits we're seeing is that people are getting primary care. They're getting their prevention done. And a lot of extra tests aren't being done multiple times. And so that's part of the savings. And a lot of our quality measures have increased. They've improved. At the same time, we measure satisfaction of our members, and their satisfaction scores are going up. They're happier with the program because they all have somebody they see on a regular basis. And frankly, our provider satisfaction scores have increased too. That providers tend to be able to see the same people over and over again. They get to know their patients. And what we're trying to do for our providers is to get back to what all of us went to medical school and nursing school to do, is to provide good care to people that we know and that are our patients.
So I understand that another component of the new world of this managed fee-for-service system in Connecticut is the use of a nonprofit administrator for processing medical claims. Was that something that was being done by a state administrative office or division prior to 2011?
Well, prior to 2011, part of our program was administered by managed care companies. One of them was a not-for-profit. Two of them were for-profit. And the state administered another part of it. So it was, instead of one program, it was a sort of a bunch of programs that were not linked together very well. Mm-hmm. And one of the challenges with that is when the state, you know, people like me would sit down and try to look at data to see who was getting care and who wasn't getting care, you were trying to link a bunch of different data sets together to try to get a picture, and they never quite linked. The benefit we have in our system now is that we have one entity paying the claims, and so we have one set of data. And we're able to look and see who's getting care, who's not getting care. We're able to look and see where they're getting their care, we're able to see trends. We're able to see, hey, wait a minute, there's, you know, the cost of this is going way up and there's no real reason for it. Why is that? We're able to look and see, wait, gee, you know, there's a, folks in this part of the state may not be getting their vaccines in time. What's going on there? So we're able to look at our program in total and say, okay, what are our priorities? What are we looking at here? What's working? What's not working? If something's not working, what can we do to fix it? And then we go about doing that. So we're able to get a complete picture of our program. Now, I meet with people who have my job in other states, and we talk and compare notes, and a lot of the other medical directors around the country are starting to look at Connecticut and realize, well, wait a minute, we're a very data-rich state. We're able to look at what's happening out there and make educated decisions about our program.
I guess one of the other things that wasn't consistent was the amount that was being reimbursed across the state, but the new system has now essentially flattened the reimbursement so that everybody's getting the same thing. Does this allude to the fact that there were some measurable variations between reimbursements, whether you were in Stamford or Enfield or New London?
Well, I think under managed care, there were different reimbursements. Now, was it based upon where you were practicing or whether you drove a harder bargain with the managed care companies? I think there were a lot of reasons for it. There was also a lot of variability. And it's hard to say whether the variability was a good thing or a bad thing. I think we have a sense now of we're structured, we have a statewide program, everybody knows what the rules are, and then if things aren't working, we can adjust them.
Okay. One of the services that's now available to patients as a result of this new initiative is a provider hotline that patients can call?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Essentially, the benefit of this program is that for patients or for providers, for that matter, to get information, they have one place to call. So if they need information about a medical service, they call our medical ASO, which is Community Health Network of Connecticut, which is actually a not-for-profit. If it's a question about mental health or behavioral health, they would call Beacon, which is our behavioral health partnership. And then for dental services, Benecare is our dental provider.
Okay. We talked a little bit about the nonprofit administrator and the processing of medical claims, but we didn't get too much into the cost savings. So in the last few minutes that we have with you, Dr. Zavosky, let's talk a little bit about some of these savings points. My understanding is that as a result of this new system with Connecticut's Medicaid program, there's more than a 50% savings on the average Medicaid managed care plan.
I'm not the finance guy. I'm the medical director,
okay.
So I can play ignorance on the finances.
Okay.
I do know that the amount of money that we spend per member has been decreasing fairly consistently for the past 2+ years.
Mm-hmm.
What's causing that is probably a combination of a number of things. We did decrease our administrative costs. That is true. I think we've gotten a lot more folks being able to get primary and preventive care, which tends to be less expensive. Our utilization of inpatient hospital has been decreasing consistently over the period of time that we moved into this new model. And over the last, I think it's 6 quarters now, use of the emergency department has also declined. The places where the most expensive care is provided, and very often it's care that's provided too little too late, has been decreasing, where better care, primary care, has been, or earlier care, I should say, shouldn't say better care, because we have very good hospitals in this state. earlier care, preventive care, is being provided at a much higher rate. And I think it's still too early to say. What I would offer as an example is our dental program, where we went to the ASO arrangement in, I think, 2010. And we started providing and really emphasizing preventive care for children so that they would not develop dental decay. And what we found over the past 2 years now is that the number of kids who have required restorative care in their teens has dropped precipitously. And it's not because they can't get the care, it's because they don't need the care anymore. Mm-hmm. They have good teeth.
So is there any room or any desire on your part as the medical director for the Department of Social Services that you'd like to see happen that isn't already happening as part of this streamlining initiative?
Oh boy, there's a loaded question.
Well, let's hit the number one thing on Santa's list.
The number one thing on Santa's list is to stay the course. I think we're going in the right direction. I think we're able to provide, I keep talking about primary and preventive care because that's where my heart is. I think we're doing a much better job of that than we used to. And I think that's an investment in our state's future. We're also doing a lot more preventive screening among kids for things like developmental and behavioral concerns. Mm-hmm. Because there's lots of information out there that if you identify kids who have behavioral problems early on and address them early on, that they end early on and kids don't go on to have problems in school, end up in the juvenile justice system, etc. And so my hope is that we're investing in a new generation for Connecticut that in another decade or more, we are going to be the shining example of how to raise your kids as a state in the across the United States.
Right. Connecticut's new managed fee-for-service system and their Medicaid program is one touted in a recent Wall Street Journal article as saving money and improving care. We hope that our visit with the State Department of Social Services Medical Director, Dr. Robert Zavosky, has shed a little more light on how that's all working, and we really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us and give us a little bit of an education about this system that a lot of people are engaged with, Doctor, but I guess very few people are able to sort of push the curtain aside to see how it's all working and the benefits that it's not only bringing to the taxpayers in terms of cost savings, but as we heard from you, an incredible amount of advancement in terms of the end user, the patient here in Connecticut. So thank you and the department for your good work, and great to meet you and talk with you. We hope to speak again soon.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and don't necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make your request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.vocat, V as in Victor, O-K-E-T, at connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for another installment of the award-winning For the People, or listen to this and other For the People podcasts under the podcast tab on our station's website or on iTunes. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.